Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, August 27th, 2012. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicki Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Every Monday, live from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are available 24-7 on drsaputo.com and prn.fm.
Today, you're going to hear Vicki's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got a great show for you today. It's going to include Vicki's little story herself on what do you do if you have an injury.
And are U.S. MDs suffering from burnout? And can antibiotics cause infants to become overweight in childhood? And can microbes in our gut cause us to gain weight?
And how about does a strong spiritual belief lead to better health?
And cramming for tests, does it pay off? And when we don't get enough sleep?
And if you'd like to join in our conversation and have questions about our topics, give us a call on Mondays from 10 to 11 Pacific time or 1 to 2 Eastern time on parent.fm at 888-874-4888.
It's always good to be prepared in case you have an accident and to have a first aid kit handy if you can. And I had my own accident about 3 or 4 days ago, and I just wanted to share my experience with you, hoping that it might help others. I was taking a walk and going down a really steep hill, and my shoe caught on the blacktop, and I went flying down this hill head first and landed right on my chin. And I could feel everything in my head just shift from one side to the other. And I hit it so hard that my head just bounced. So what I did was my friends were with me and they saw me sliding down the hill. So I asked them to sit me up because my head was going down the hill. And I
with the rest of you too, or just your head?
Well, they saw
it wasn't disconnected.
They saw
it?
Me going down head first.
That's
what I mean. First down. So after I sat up, he gave me a ride. But, you know, I knew that I had to get home as fast as possible because if I didn't, I wasn't going to be able to get my DMSO on there.
Right.
DMSO is short for dimethyl sulfoxide, and it's really good if you can get that on an injury as soon as possible. I knew if I ended up in an ER or some other place, I was going to sit there and wait and wait and wait, and I was going to be getting swollen and more black and blue and everything else. So the first thing I did when I got home was that I washed it and assessed it and put the DMSO on there, and then ice, and called Len. He told me to come in and get a photon stimulator treatment, and I called my dentist because my jaws were hurting. I took a little vitamin C, like about 1,000 milligrams, before I went to the dentist just to make sure that in case he was going to do an x-ray, because that reduces the amount of radiation. And also I started getting stressed when I realized that I couldn't get ice in all the areas that I needed it. Called my son to come and help me and to give me a ride and so forth. But I used some essential oil of lavender. If you remember, we were talking about that just a week or two ago and how that was helpful to help people to relax. So I did that, and I put some arnica pellets under my tongue. You know, if people don't have DMSO, arnica works pretty good too to help to reduce and prevent bruising. And I took some herbs. I had some chamomile and some what else did I have? Oh, passion flower. And I also put on my copper bracelets because my knees were all banged
up.
You're
leaving nothing undone, are you?
Well, my wrists hurt, my arms hurt, everything hurt, my neck hurt, everything. But you know, it was just amazing because I have just barely, like if you really look hard and close, a little teeny tiny bit of bruising, but basically no bruising.
See, what Vicki did here was what we all should be thinking about when we have any kind of an acute injury. Because there are simple things that you can do that make a huge difference in what the outcome is going to be. It was just a few days ago that Vicki had her injury, and it was a substantial injury because I examined her myself as soon as she had the incident. And what I found, what you see today is almost nothing. Tiny little bruises here and there, but not much. The DMSO is really a very underused substance. that's fantastic to reduce inflammation, to reduce bruising, to take care of pain. It's a great anti-inflammatory and antioxidant. It's a great way to go.
When I got home, the bruising under my chin was starting to go down my neck, and I put the DMSO on it, and it went away. I mean, it was like it erased it. The same thing with the palms of my hands. They were all red and bruised and dirty, of course, but I got it clean. But it just like it erased it. So it was wonderful to be able to use that.
And how about the infrared light? See, that's another beautiful thing that does a lot. Most people don't know about that. And it's not like it's a rare thing, but it's not common to find people who are doing infrared light therapy. That really does a lot when somebody has an acute injury. I had a patient come to me, it must have been a year or two ago, that was in an auto accident. And in the middle of the night, about an hour and a half or 2 hours after it occurred, and the car was totaled, and the person had a lot of soft tissue injuries, was crying on the phone saying, "I'm in so much pain." I said, "Fine, come on down to the office. We'll go ahead and treat you with some infrared light." And within 15 minutes, most of the pain in her neck and back and the spasm that was there disappeared, and the next morning, most of the symptoms were gone. Now, you don't usually see that when you have an acute injury. We have a whiplash. That's usually something that you have to do a lot of work with your chiropractor and body workers, et cetera, for weeks after the injury. So I'm impressed with what infrared light does, particularly in combination with DMSO.
Isn't it a shame that DMSO and photon stimulation isn't in all emergency rooms?
Well, that's true.
It should be in all emergency rooms everywhere, all over the world.
Well, that's really true. And I remember about 10 years ago, my tennis coach was asking me, "What do you think about DMSO?" And I didn't know about it at the time. And I said, "Oh, you don't want to do that. That's something that's used as a solvent. And we don't want to put solvents in our body because it might be really toxic." And he laughed and he said, "Yeah, well, a lot of people are using it, you know, and it works pretty well. And I had an injury myself at the time, but I wouldn't use it." So now that I know what this does, and I've had lots of experience with it, and I use it on a lot of my patients.
Plus, it's made by the body.
Yeah. I mean, it's a natural substance to the human body.
It's an antioxidant.
Yeah, it does all those things we talked about. It's really something that should be used for acute injuries on a regular basis. You can actually pour it in an open wound. It's not going to hurt you. And if you have a burn, it's the most unbelievable thing to relieve pain within 30 seconds. I know that I've had calls from patients say, "I just have a burn. It's a size of 3 or 4 inches. It's all red and it's already blistering. What do I do?" And I said, "Well, do you have any DMSO?" And a lot of my patients do. And that particular patient did. And I said, "Well, I want you to pour DMSO right over the burn. And within a minute, it'll be gone." They said, "You got to be kidding me." But they did that. And within 30 seconds, the pain was gone. And if you use it from time to time, it gets rid of the pain completely. And it speeds up healing.
People need to know how to use it, though. It needs to go on clean skin because it's a carrier, and anything on your skin, it'll take it right through into the bloodstream. And also, just as a sidebar here, it does have a little bit of an odor to it.
Well, you're going to have a garlic breath, okay, within about a minute of the time you put it on your skin, which tells you how fast it goes through the skin, gets into your lungs, and is exhaled into the breath. So it's something that's really it's really powerful. Now, when you have an acute injury, do the DMSO, do the photonic stimulator, and get the infrared light therapy. But you also want to be sure that you see a good chiropractor because you want to get aligned. What happens when you have an injury like this is that you lose alignment, and as long as your alignment, particularly if the spine is off, you're going to have an ongoing problem with whatever results from misalignment, which is usually pain. And if you're misaligned in your back and your hips are a little tilted, one leg will be longer than the other, you have unnatural stresses put on your hip and knee and ankle. And so it's important to make sure you see a chiropractor.
It's good to think about all these things ahead of time, because when an accident happens, a lot of times people don't think straight. I mean, I have a friend that had a bad fall, and everybody kept stopping and saying to her, "You're bleeding all over. Do you need help? Do you need a ride?" Whatever. And she turned it down from everybody. And the next day she was all swollen up and bruised, and she still has a scar on her cheek from that.
Sure. And throwing in some body work is a good idea, too. Massage and stretching, things
like...
Well,
not right away. I think ice is pretty good.
Well, ice at the beginning. You want to do all the things that are in rice, okay? The acronym that says rest, use ice, use compression, and use elevation. But after that, within 24 to 48 hours, you should be looking at the chiropractic for sure, and looking at things like Pilates and gyrotonic and stretches that are done by people who are pretty expert at it. In fact, another really good thing to do is acupuncture. It does a lot to take care of pain and to restore normal balance. So,
and the other thing is, too, is that the DMSO and the photon stimulator are both good for pain.
Oh, they're excellent for pain. And if you're older, you want to prevent a fall, there's a lot you can do as well. You need to stay strong. So doing exercise on a regular basis is a big deal.
And balance.
Right. And go to the gym. Make sure that you have as much strength as you can. And make sure that you eat well. You know, nutrition's a huge part of this, particularly if you're on statin drugs and you're low in coenzyme Q10. Because if you're low in coenzyme Q10, there's no way in the world that you're going to be able to have energy production that amounts to much.
Or if you're taking medications that can induce osteoporosis. I'll tell you, I hit so hard I couldn't believe I didn't break my chin.
Yeah, well, that's right. And then there's vitamin D. I mean, how many elderly people have as much vitamin D as they should? Very few, because we don't get out in the sun between 10 and 2, which is the only time that UVB rays are there. And oftentimes, if you're really old, you're often in a convalescent hospital or some kind of residential care facility, and you're putting sunscreen on your face the few times you do get out, and the UVB rays don't go through your clothes. And they won't go through glass, so you're not getting very much vitamin D. And then some people are short in carnitine, L-carnitine. You can't make energy very well without CoQ10 or without carnitine. So another factor that's really important to look at. And lastly, testosterone levels. As we age, our testosterone levels drop. And if they drop to levels that are abnormal, then we can't make muscle growth and repair occur like it should. So it's worth having a testosterone level checked if you're weak and your balance isn't too good.
What are some of the medications that can increase your risk of osteoporosis?
Oh, there's tons of them. Coumadin and heparin, you know, the anticoagulants do that. Dilantin does it. Lasix does it. There's a whole slew of them. If you want to learn more about that, go to drsaputo.com. And take the free health assessment that's on osteoporosis and osteopenia. And it's a free assessment, and it'll tell you all the things you need to know about those particular problems. The last thing I want to touch on that has to do with this is that you want to make sure that you have shoes, particularly if you're not strong, that are not leather, not slippery, that have a nice grip on them, that are rubber.
Well, you know, one of the problems with mine is I had on shoes that day that I normally don't wear. Mm. And they have a lot of grip on them, but they were those kind of tennis shoes where the sole kind of slants out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that's what caught on the edge of the pavement that took me flying through the air.
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, you've got to have all the support that you can, because it's hard to keep your balance if you're on something that's slippery. The other thing is if you're not stable, use some kind of support. Use a cane or a walker, or if you have to, even
or a walking
more than
stick.
That. Walking stick is a great way to go. Didn't that help you some when you were you like it because you like it?
Me? I've never used a walking stick.
I thought you
stick.
Talked about a walking stick. Maybe it was one of my patients.
No, it wasn't me, but I was thinking about it after my fall because, you know, a lot of people don't want to use a cane because they don't want to look old.
Yeah, well, that's
but
right.
Some people like to use walking sticks.
All right, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on PRN.FM. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. We're going to open up the lines now at 888-874-4888. So give us a call if you have a question about your health or about what we're discussing. And now it's time for Vicki's first 2020 tip on some laughs for seniors. And we'll be right back talking about our USMD suffering from burnout. Stay tuned.
You have to get a few chuckles a day for good health. So here are some oldies but goodies. There was a distraught senior citizen that phoned her doctor's office. "Is it true that the medication you prescribed has to be taken for the rest of my life?" "Oh, yes, I'm afraid so." "Well, I'm wondering then just how serious is my condition, because these this prescription is marked no refills.
Oh, jeez. That's a bad thing to say.
Old gentleman was on an operating table and he was awaiting surgery, and he insisted that his son, a renowned surgeon, perform the operation. So as he was about to get the anesthesia, he asked to speak to his son. Yes, what is it? Well, don't be nervous, son. Do your best, and just remember, if it doesn't go so well and if something happens to me, your mother's going to just come and live with you and your wife.
That's great.
On aging. Eventually, you're going to reach a point when you stop lying about your age and start bragging about it. This is so true. I love to hear them say, you don't look that old.
Oh, jeez. Oh, that's...
Oh, you know, when you're dissatisfied and you'd like to go back to your youth, think of algebra.
That's right.
You know, you're getting old when everything either dries up or leaks. Whoop! Gotta go.
That's right.
Mean. First you forget names, then you forget faces, then you forget to pull up your zipper, but it's worse when you forget to pull it down. So there's two guys, one old and young, and they're pushing their carts around Walmart when they collide. And the old guy says to the young guy, about that, I'm looking for my wife, and I guess I wasn't paying attention to where I was going. And the young guy says, well, that's okay. It's a coincidence. I'm looking for my wife, too. I can't find her, and I'm getting a little desperate. And the old guy says, well, maybe I can help you find her. What does she look like? And the young guy says, well, she's 27 years old, tall with red hair. She's got blue eyes. She's buxom, and she's wearing no bra. She has legs, and she's wearing short shorts. What does your wife look like? And the old guy says, it doesn't matter. Let's look for yours.
I guess we men are testosterone poisons. It's about that simple, huh, Vicki? Well, humor is the best medicine, so thanks for that. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from Dawn from Maryland. Hi, Dawn.
Hi, Dr. Sabuda. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a dime-sized sunspot on my right upper arm, and it's like a brown age spot, but it's a little sore and it's a little pink in the middle, and it's not really healing. I've had it for several months, and I suspect, and I will be going to a dermatologist, but I suspect it might be a basal cell carcinoma, although of course I hope not. But number one, besides what he can do, maybe with a laser or whatever they do, I don't know, what can I do to improve healing?
Probably not. I mean, you want to do all the lifestyle things, of course, diet, exercise, stress reduction, sleep, and all that business. And of course, that comes first. But if you've already got the lesion, I think the first thing to do is go to the dermatologist, because sometimes these do turn out to be cancers. And it does sound a little bit suspicious. I wouldn't say that's what it is, but I would definitely see if it hasn't healed for such a long time, I would definitely see a dermatologist while it's smaller rather than when it's bigger.
You're just
right. Yes.
Sun right now.
I have other ones and they heal quickly, but, what have you had experience with magnets or anything that a person can do themselves to right on the spot topically?
I don't think this is a time to think of things like that. This is a time to go to your doctor, because
you've
got
something
you've had for some time now and it's not healing.
Right.
And so that's one of the warning signs. You may have something that's more, it could be serious.
Yes.
So I think get that done first. Then if it's not anything that's significant after the doctor has examined you, then you can try these other things that might be of some value, like infrared light therapy might be of some value. But I would definitely go to the doctor first for this kind of thing. So
and a run-of-the-mill dermatologist is fine. It doesn't have to be onco-dermatologist or something like that.
Just a regular dermatologist. So
Okay, I'll do that right away.
Well, good luck. I hope it's okay.
Okay, have a great day. All right, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Medical doctors are only human, and it's not new that they're often overworked and fatigued without balance in their lives. And now a survey has come out showing just how common it is for U.S. physicians to suffer burnout. And this is all a setup, you know, for errors and poor patient care and personal and relationship problems in their lives. So let's talk about this survey that was reported in the Archives of Internal Medicine.
Okay, well, they looked at about 7,000 doctors, and about 25% of them actually participated in the study. And they found that nearly half of them, as you said, were suffering from at least one symptom of burnout. And that meant that the risk for making mistakes and the adverse effects it has on physicians and their personal lives is huge. They showed that about 38% of the physicians had high emotional exhaustion, and about 30% didn't even feel like they were themselves. 12% of them had a low sense of personal accomplishment, and they're not satisfied with their work-life balance. All these things were predictable about 20 years ago, and I can remember giving a grand rounds lecture at my hospital in the early 90s, talking about what was happening as HMO medicine was taking over, and talk of more governmental control over how Medicare and maybe universal health care might affect the practice of medicine.
And speaking of government care, you know, this makes me really extra concerned about the effect of the Affordable Care Act on our already burned out doctors with 30 million more patients coming into the system.
Well, see, we have a lot less in the way of flexibility because there are more rules that tell you what you can and can't do. It becomes like one size fits all much more than it was about 30 years ago when doctors could do whatever they wanted in terms of the treatments. And I'll have to say that the one place that we didn't do well was in cost control, because when patients would come into the office or they were in the hospital, what we looked for was the best kind of treatment we could give them, paid little attention to cost. And of course, with the system that we have, that's a sick care system that depends on a lot of technology and medications, costs get out of hand real quickly. So we've got a major problem on our hands about how we're going to move forward with a healthcare system that's oriented to wellness and prevention, and nutrition and natural therapies, because these are the kinds of things that are really the future of medicine. The system we have today doesn't work. It costs too much. More than half of us have a chronic disease, which means we're not doing a good job at keeping people healthy. And there are about 1 million people, according to the Gary Null study, which is a wonderful study called Death by Medicine, showing us that we have about 1 million deaths every year at the hands of some things that we're doing in healthcare.
Well, you know, you were mentioning prevention and how that's such a good, you know, such a good idea. And part of this study, they were talking about specialties that are most apt to suffer burnout. So prevention was one of the ones where they had the least amount of burnout, were doctors that practice prevention.
Right.
So that would be good not just for the patients, but for the doctors too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's nothing like being frustrated by being limited in what you can do for your patient. When you work for somebody else, which is what's happened now, we've very foolishly given away our power to the HMO organizations. I can remember back maybe 15 years ago when doctors are actually selling their practices to hospitals for close to $500,000. And the deal was that they could maintain control of their practice for 5 years, and then the hospital would own the practice, and they would work for the hospital. And that's what's happening now at a lot of hospitals.
Well, they gave their power away.
It's gone. So now we're at the hands of people who are bean counters, who are telling us what we can spend money on, what we can't. And a lot of the time, people are just not getting the care that they deserve. Anyway, it's time for a PRN.FM station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The lines are open at 888-874-4888, and we've got some calls waiting. We'll get to them when we come back. And so when we come, we talk about antibiotics. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Swooter here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we have a call from somebody from Tennessee. Terry from Tennessee?
Good afternoon.
Just a quick question. Hi, how are you?
Very good. Thanks for asking. I have a question for you about turmeric as far as being anti-inflammatory. I don't believe you've mentioned it today, and I wanted to know how you felt it stood up as far as efficacy against the other things you've been discussing today.
I think it's very effective, and it's a great thing to use. I mean, I use it often in a lot of my patients who have inflammatory processes going on. We'll often do what's called a live blood cell analysis to see if people have more coagulation than they should in certain settings, particularly as they age. And using turmeric or curcumin is a very, very good way to keep blood thin. It's a great antioxidant. It's a good anti-inflammatory drug. And it's sometimes effective in people who have cancer. So you've asked a good question, and I think it's one of those underused antioxidants and anti-inflammatories and anticoagulants.
Would you think it's more effective on long-term health issues as more of a preventative or an early stage treatment, or can it also be used for some, just like you've been discussing, for an acute situation like Vicky had?
It can be used both ways. What I like to do is I make sure that I have plenty of fruits and vegetables, seeds and nuts, herbs and spices, and carry my and have a good attitude through the day, and that's a recipe for good health and happiness. So I'm more inclined not to use it as a supplement, to use it as an herb and a seasoning.
You know what I do? I sprinkle it in my green drink.
Mm. Yeah, there are lots of ways to do that. So I'm more inclined to use it as a food than I am as a supplement.
Okay. I mean, I tend to take some every day in the little vitamin C powder and drink it, like, with my breakfast, let's say, eat that way. But I was just curious how you felt it stood up against the DMSO and other things you were discussing. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Oh, well, the DMSO is more effective for right away to put it on to prevent bruising.
Yeah, so it depends on what you're talking about. Okay, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
Don't you think it's interesting all the things that we're learning about gut microbes and their importance to our health?
Boy, I'll say, you know, that's become a really hot topic in the last 5 years or so.
For example, you know, like how the antibiotics, you know, wipe out the good bacteria with the bad, and a lot of other drugs like steroids and birth control pills and the NSAIDs, they also can create negative effects when it comes to our health. So, you know, researchers at the University of Maryland School of Medicine have identified 26 species of microbes in the gut that are linked to obesity and metabolic syndrome.
Yeah, well, it's amazing at how important we're seeing the intestinal tract's microflora is. Those bacteria and fungi and viruses that live down there live in a very complex ecosystem that are in a relationship with the outside world and with the inside world. It's like the buffer zone of the body that helps us to adapt to our environment. And when we see that 26 species of bacteria are involved in things like obesity and metabolic syndrome and are affecting insulin resistance and blood sugar and blood pressure and cholesterol and inflammation as measured by C-reactive protein, it's giving you just a tip of the iceberg look at how important it is to know about this.
Well, you know, the other thing that was interesting was it just came out about how babies that are treated with antibiotics increase their risk of obesity in childhood. And this was a large study on 10,000 children and
there's
babies.
There's no question that what happens in the gut is really important. It's affected by diet. It's affected by inflammation or infections, by the digestive processes we have, like if you're lactose intolerant or gluten sensitive.
And one of the things that happens is if you kill healthy bacteria, some of that bacteria influences how we absorb nutrients that would otherwise keep us lean.
That's exactly right. So it's very fascinating. Like you've said, the steroids and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs and birth control pills and people who are exposed to a lot of toxic things in the environment, drugs in the environment that we're inhaling because or swallowing because we've made about 100,000 new things that have never been in the environment before, and we don't know what kind of an effect that will have in terms of safety, but you can bet that it takes thousands of years to adapt to just small changes in the environment?
Well, you know, there is a link between the gut microbes and inflammation and asthma and autoimmune diseases. So a lot of doctors don't think to treat the gut for these type of problems.
There's no question.
And abnormal flora ends up deactivating some of the digestive enzymes. It can create leaky gut syndrome, and then it can make the bad bacteria grow too much, because see, when you have the friendly bacteria, it crowds it out, and then it interferes with even essential fatty acids by deactivating those, and of course with irritable bowel syndrome and those kind of diseases.
Right. It was just probably 10 or 15 years ago that I really got into it with the gastroenterologist at my hospital, because they didn't think that probiotics were really much of anything to do to maintain normal health. And, of course, we're using antibiotics like crazy in the hospital for a lot of people who need them because they have infections that can be life-threatening. And so what happens is the incidence of what's called C. difficile enterocolitis, called C. diff enterocolitis, is a very serious illness that has a mortality rate that's got to be between 10% and 20%. And what do they do for treatment? Add another antibiotic to try and kill the C. diff bacteria, which makes some sense, but you're also wiping out the whole microflora of the gut when you're doing that, and you have to start from square one. I mean, it's naive to think that you can do something to affect the whole gut and then think you can repair it by, I mean, if you look at it.
Well, those people really need probiotics.
They really do. And now they're beginning to understand it. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. It's time for Vicki's final 2020 tip on can microwaves affect the nutritional content of food. And when we come back, we're going to talk about does spiritual belief lead to better health. So stay tuned.
An article about microwave cooking by Ed Bauman, who's a nutritionist in our area, and how microwaving drastically decreases the nutrients in our food. Remember the good old days before microwaves and we prepared our food without a microwave oven? Gee, you know, we actually boiled water on the stove, and we cooked our chicken and our other meats in the oven, and our vegetables, we steamed them and baked them or sauteed them, and food was whole and it was fresh, and we weren't eating these processed foods like we do now. And then modern science and technology brought us the microwave oven that could heat food in from 30 seconds to a couple of minutes, and it fit right in with our fast lifestyle and a lot of these working families. But the industry claimed that microwave cooking protected the nutrient contents of the food. But does it? Well, think about it. The texture was changed. The flavor changed. The food became rubbery. They lacked those savory smells and layered flavors that came from cooking food slower and longer. But nevertheless, people bought the convenience aspect and the speed and the simplicity. The science, supported by the food industry, has continued to claim the health benefits of microwave cooking. But recently, published data from some reliable sources questioned the health benefits of microwave food. So what about a steady diet of eating foods cooked at such high heat? Well, the sensitive compounds in the food, such as the amino acids and the fatty acids and the vitamins and the phytonutrients, they change. And recent studies have shown that they decline, that minerals decline, and other and protein sources do. And then there was a Scandinavian study that showed that just cooking asparagus spears in microwaving caused a reduction of vitamins. And then there was a study of garlic, like if you cooked it for 60 seconds in a microwave, it inactivates its allicin, and that's the principal ingredient against cancer. Another study showed that broccoli that was zapped in a microwave with just a little water lost up to 97% of its beneficial antioxidants. And by comparison, steamed broccoli lost about 11% or fewer of its antioxidants. So there were also reductions in other nutrients. And then there was an Australian study that showed that microwaves destroy proteins. And another one showed that microwaving can destroy the essential disease-fighting agents in breast milk that offer protection for the babies. You know, many times women like to pump their milk and give it to them later, or have the babysitter give it to them later, or what have you. But the microwave breast milk lost this, it's called lysozyme, and it's a marker of inflammation. And it loses that and antibodies, and it also fosters the growth of potentially pathogenic bacteria. And then, of course, there's the leaching of the plastic into the plastic baby bottle if you put that in the microwave oven. So microwave cooking, we also know, changes the molecular composition of the food. The only thing we use ours for is for warm compresses when we need them, and maybe to sterilize the kitchen sponges. So you might want to think about trying a toaster oven and just scheduling your time in the kitchen so that you're preparing other things or doing something else while you're cooking, and set timer and just plan ahead. Try a crock pot. You can put your food in there in the morning and have it cook all day and come home and the house smells good and you can eat your dinner, because your health is worth it. So get an, and then if you like popcorn, get an air popper for the popcorn and use organic, not genetically engineered popcorn or that artificial butter flavor that we talked about recently, how dangerous and toxic that is. You know, if you don't take care of yourself and your family, who else is going to do it? And if your health suffers, was it worth it to save this time? And if you're worried about cleaning pans because you don't want to clean the pans and food gets stuck in them and so forth, first of all, you don't want to use Teflon because that's really toxic. Use stainless steel. If it gets stuck in there, just put some detergent in with some water to soak the pan and put it on the stove on low heat. And when it starts to kind of like bubble and so forth, all sticky stuff gets loose and it just rinses right off. It's so easy. It's just like magic. So tips for you. I know it was a little bit long, but I think it's really worth it. I'd love to discourage at least somebody from using their microwave oven.
You know, I like that tip a lot, Vicki, and particularly the case you make for what microwaves do to breast milk, okay, when you're feeding a baby, really drives the point home, because what you're doing when you put those high temperatures in there is you're destroying the antibodies, a lot of nutrients that are important for the baby. And think of it this way. Every food that we eat has got things in it that are good in their natural state. And when we change them because of really high temperatures inside that are not natural, you're going to be in trouble.
And some people say, oh, well, I only microwave water.
Yeah, well, even that can be dangerous too, because it can explode. That's right.
Yes, it can. And also, remember, it changes the molecular composition
of the body,
of whatever it is that you
exactly
heat it up in there.
Even water. That's right.
The temperature is too high anyway.
That's right. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we have a call from Luke from Georgia. Hi, Luke. How are you doing?
Hi. I think this is me. I'm not Luke. I'm Bill, but that's cool. I had a hypothetical question about if someone was suffering from leukemia, what kind of protocol you might recommend, and also would it involve intravenous vitamin C and ozone therapy?
Okay. Well, listen, all those things are possible to use for treating leukemia. But leukemia is one of the things that we actually do pretty well in mainstream medicine. There are chemotherapy drugs that I think would be very effective there. But if you're looking for complementary and alternative approaches, sure. I mean, doing things like fish oil, for example. There was a study that came out maybe 8 months ago or a year ago that talked about how there's an ingredient in fish oil that in mice actually cured one form of leukemia. And I call the author of that paper, and I wondered if we could get the actual active ingredient. And he said, you don't need to. You could just use the fish oil by itself. So that would be something to discuss with a doctor.
What about artemisinin?
Yeah, artemisinin can be very effective. And if you want to learn more about artemisinin, go to drsaputo.com and put artemisinin, A-R-T-E-M-I-S-I-N-I-N, into the search box, and you'll get a video on it. Same thing with methyl jasminate. Another thing that could be used, and as you, I think, mentioned, IV vitamin C can be very effective as well. So what it takes is an integrative oncologist to give you information about what is the best way to go ahead and treat any kind of cancer. And that, unfortunately, is not something you find very often, but it's what we need to do. So I hope that answered your question, Bill.
That, it does, and thank you very much. And I also wanted to offer, in terms of like cooking without nonstick cooking, it's very easy to take a stainless steel pan with a little brush, brush some olive oil on it, so it's a thin layer, and then heat it up pretty good so it smokes, and you're seasoning your pan, and maybe people don't understand that. So then you can cool it back down, and it'll be very slippery and nonstick.
Thanks for the tip. Have a great day. Lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from George from Long Island.
Good afternoon, doctor. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
I went to a home show last year, and there's a man selling grass-fed beef there, cooking it in an infrared oven. I was wondering your opinion. I heard you on the microwave. What do you think of an infrared oven?
An infrared, I don't know much about an infrared oven, but it certainly does produce a lot of heat. I mean, all the spectrum of light that is in the on the side of the visible spectrum, as opposed to the ionizing radiation spectrum, which includes infrared, microwaves, and radio waves, all can be heated up to very high temperatures. But I don't have any experience with infrared, but we'll have to look that one up. Do you know anything about it yourself?
No, sir. I just seen him cooking with it, and I thought I'd ask you when I heard you on the microwave.
It sounds like a good idea, but I'd have to look at it. It depends on how hot it got.
Okay. The beef was great.
It would depend on the temperature that they cook that at, but I would suspect that it probably is not going to be a problem. But I don't know enough
about
it.
The lower the temperatures, usually the better.
Yeah, I like to keep cooking below 375 degrees because when you get above that, you start converting some of the chemical or some of the nutrients that are in food, like the nitrates, into nitrosamines, which cause cancer. So, sorry, I can't answer that question specifically. It's a good question.
Was that
have a good
problem
day.
With the microwave cooking above 375?
Oh yeah, way above it. Way above it. That's why it's one of the reasons why we don't recommend it. I think it gets to 500 or 600 degrees on the inside, but I'm not certain of the exact number. Thanks for the call, George. Have a good day. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sputter with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
We always talk about how we're more than just a body, that we're body, mind, emotion, spirit. And some people believe we're a spirit with a body. Well, there was a study at the University of Missouri showing the benefits of spirituality on health, and so we are going to talk about their findings.
Okay. They looked at Buddhists, Muslims, Jews, Catholics, Protestants, and they said the religion doesn't matter, but there were correlations with self-reported mental and physical health changes that were positive. And there are a lot of studies that have been published in the mainstream literature that look at how we do better in terms of our health if we have a spiritual belief.
And do you think spirituality needs to be religious?
No, not at all. Spirituality is our relationship with all that there is. It's my definition of it. So it's our relationship with the universe. Does it have to have a secular component to it so that it's either Catholic or Muslim or Jewish or some other type? Not at all. In fact, for me personally, religion is not the answer. For Vicki, it is, and we're all different. So I think that we need to look at the fact that a relationship with a higher power, with Mother Nature, with God, whatever you want to call it, is a very important thing. And if we have enough trust, good things happen to us that are going to help our health in ways that are better than if we don't.
Yeah, well, this study shows spirituality enhances our health, and it also helps our coping with health. Our belief has a very powerful effect.
Oh, on our biochemistry and our physiology. We've measured that. I mean, Candace Pert's book, Molecules of Emotion, is a wonderful book that everybody should take a look at because it really plants that seed in your mind that shows that what you believe has powerful changes in our physiology.
The other thing, too, is just being present, being able to be present, whatever it is, you know, in like you were saying about in nature and within meditation and with prayer and helping other people, whatever we really do in our lives, if we can be present with it, that's a big tool in getting in touch with our spirituality and listening to our intuition.
Yeah, well, see, there's this thing called the zone in sports. You're in that zone and everything's working right and you're not thinking about anything. You're just following the ball or whatever it is that you're doing and making it do certain things because you're totally focused on it, not worrying about whether you're going to win or lose or what's going to happen. You're just in the moment. And I call the zone of life as something that every human being has the right to explore, because that takes us to a very deep place where we're not thinking. What we're doing is being present. There's a big difference between doing and being. And if we can get into that being space, we're in that zone.
And so many people are stressed because they're thinking ahead or they're thinking to the past. Many times that's why people can't sleep at night.
And for sure.
They've done studies, too, that show that forgiveness is predictive of a person's mental health.
Oh, for sure. If you're all caught up and angry with somebody, you're punishing yourself.
So the way... A lot of times I think that the way forgiveness is defined is letting go and finding love. You know, if you look at whatever the situation is enough, you can usually find love in it somewhere.
Well, there are ways to do that. And the deeper we go into our minds with a loving attitude, the closer we're going to come to being in that trance-like state that I would call the way we relate to spirit. I can remember a time when you and I, we firewalked. We went on Tony Robbins' firewalk in about 1986. And I remember the reason we went there is that one of my patients was telling me that he was going to walk on 2,000-degree coals barefooted. And my comment to him was, and you're going to come back with barbecued feet. And his response to me is, okay, Mr. Smart Guy, why don't you come and watch it? And I thought about it and said, well, I will, and I'll bring my medical kit with me so that I can treat you after you get burned up. And we spent the whole day preparing and seeing how people got into a trance-like state. And then they brought out these wheelbarrows full of hot coals that were so hot that they made you stand back because of, there were white hot coals there. And then they spread them out on a 12-foot path that was 3 feet wide, and people took off their shoes and socks, and they start marching across the coals. And they get to the other side, and they're so excited because they'd walked on 2,000-degree coals, and they didn't get burned. And I'm there looking, going, what the hell is this? And, of course, the next thing you know is I'm saying, I have to do this too. And so did Vicky. And we both walked across those coals, and almost in a very deep trance, because we knew that if we broke that trance, that those things were hot. And we know what hot things do to flesh, but it didn't happen. Powerful experience.
Another thing to, you know, other spiritual tools about being present that I wanted to talk about. I've found in talking to people that are artists and music composers, and I also interviewed one time an animal communicator. The trick, I think, with all of this, I don't know that trick is really the right word, but the reason that they're so good at what they do is because they are so present. So I would just suggest that
they
people
have faith.
Yeah, they believe.
And they believe in themselves.
Yeah, but what I was going to suggest for people that want to feel this way is to practice being present, whichever way can get you to be in the present moment. And also the other thing is helping others and getting out of yourself.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can help people physically with prayer, with meditation. You can even help them financially. And then there are things like wilderness rites of passage and volunteering and missionaries and Peace Corps. There's this Center for Attitudinal Healing that's in Mill Valley. And you had a wonderful experience with a Uwipi ceremony.
Yeah, well, I wish I had time to tell the story, but we don't.
Sweat lodge. But there are lots of different ways. But being a good and honest and loving person and trying to feel community and being less self-centered but being present and coming from, you know, love. You know, Marianne Williamson talks about love versus fear. And if you're fearful, it can lead to stress and inflammation, and then you get sick, you know. And that's why this study talks so much about how spirituality can enhance health and coping.
Well, that's really right. And you know, you can take this a step deeper and say, does prayer have any kind of epigenetic effect on our body? And by epigenetic, I mean is does the experience of praying or meditating or doing something or being in a trance affect our DNA and our genes? And the answer is it would have to. There were wonderful studies done by David Spiegel at Stanford and a study done at on women who had stage 4 breast cancer, and those that were into the program, which had to do with group support and meditation and things of that nature, lifestyle things, they lived twice as long as the women who didn't participate in a group like that. And at San Francisco General Hospital, there they looked at people and prayed for them, and they didn't tell them they were praying for them. Then they looked at the outcome in terms of how many people had complications from their hospitalization, and it was statistically different. So we know that the epigenetic changes that occur in settings like this are powerful. Dean Ornish's work shows the same thing. Wish we had more time.
And the spiritual realm has no time.
Well, that's another interesting study as well that sometime we'll have to go over with you. Anyway, we're at the end of the show, and I'd like to remind you that we'll be back to talk live about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and DrSaputo.com from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Time and 10 to 11 Pacific Time. Prescriptions for health will also be available 24/7 on DrSaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you invite you'd like to have more information, pop Dr. Saputo Radio on DrSaputo.com. And check out our Fast Track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the science, which is